Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. We've got an interview with State Senator Peter Mrchicki, the Senate Majority Leader and the sponsor of Senate Bill 76, which deals with alcohol licensing in the state. So thanks for being here with us, Senator. Really appreciate it.
I'm pleased to be here. I think we were just beginning our outreach on the Title IV review. In fact, we had a meeting this week with the team, which is a 100-and-something person stakeholder team. We want to make sure we're not derailed by folks that have a special interest as we go around the state, which is one of the things that happened last time. So this is a timely opportunity to talk about the bill. The only thing that's missing is you're a craft beer guy, and we're in a very dry studio.
Yeah, it probably would be a lot more enjoyable if we were sitting someplace where we could have a couple of cold ones right now. Well, before we dive into SB 76, let me ask you a couple of questions about some of the recent activities of our Alcohol Beverage Control Board. I know right as we're doing this interview, they're asking for public comment on some new regulations that they propose for distillery tasting rooms. By the time this broadcast, the public comment period will just have closed. But they're talking about limiting or prohibiting the use of non-alcoholic mixers by the distilleries in their tasting rooms. And I wanted to get your feel for that, given that the distilleries are already limited by law in how much alcohol they can actually serve. Do you think it's really a good idea or necessary to prohibit the use of non-alcoholic mixers as part of that?
So it's been entertaining. I think most of the folks out there in radio land or wherever they are have heard the discussion about them trying to limit something called fun in the distilleries. And, you know, I think they've the new director has sort of a more black and white interpretation than there has been in the past. I think it was a more pragmatic approach in the past. I think that's something that we need to sort of discuss and lean on in the future. It just simply doesn't work that way. It's not a cookie cutter kind of business. But this bill doesn't deal with that as much. As you know, that's sort of a newer business model than the traditional license types we've had in the state. That will be the next step. If, as this bill goes through the process, if there are changes that can occur that all of the stakeholder group, that will keep the majority of the stakeholder groups on board, we're certainly willing to entertain those changes. But I will tell you, it's taken us 4 years to get here. It's a relatively precarious effort to bring all those people together. And right now, we're at a successful stage that I think could get across the finish line. And there are other issues with the ABC board, just some examples of
Let's stick with the ABC
sort of isn't working right now. I mean, one is the hotel lobby bars. You know, most new hotels have kind of an open floor plan where there may be a bar in it and they're counting it differently. Things are different and the board is not adjusting. Another issue is tribal identification cards as adequate identification. The addition of 524 different tribal identification cards is a problem, and it's something that needs to be dealt with if it's something to be used to enter an establishment. Restaurant definition, they are trying to redefine. The board is getting into whether or not the restaurant has enough employees to call themselves a restaurant. I don't know that that's an appropriate role of the ABC board. Catering permits. I mean, there was a recent issue at the Elks Lodge in Homer. Some of these facilities have been doing events. Well, you can look at the age of some of the facilities. They've been doing events there since they were built. They're old. They're log. The chinking has been worn out since you and I have been on the planet, right? So these are things that we need to adjust to. Again, it's often they're viewing things that's much more black and white as what they had in the past. And perhaps we need to better define those so that it's not done in regulation, it's done in statute. Just a couple of other things that I think are relatively important. The 1985 law that defined how many rooms allows a tourism BDL. Some of these have been renewed 16 times. And the board is challenging some of these smaller hotels in there.
Yeah, we saw some of those, several half dozen here on the peninsula, all that category.
So that's an issue. And just a final one is increasing prices for live entertainment. So in the regs has always been that you couldn't have a happy hour, right? Where you just suddenly weren't selling a whole bunch of alcohol for a lower price. But what has always been allowed is that you could charge more
right.
when you have live entertainment to cover the cost of that special event. And they're challenging that currently. So I think there's a lot of work to do on clarifying if the staff continues to look at such a black and white interpretation. Frankly, if the director is going to make all of the interpretations without the experience of the board, why do we have an ABC board? I think
I thought this was kind of one of the things we were trying to address a few years ago when we moved the board from public safety over to commerce, to get the idea that they were supposed to be regulating a commercial activity, not acting like law enforcement.
Well, that's right. And I think there's some work to do, and that just complicates this effort. And what this effort is about is kind of modernizing. It was the Title IV review. It's a 115-page bill, four-year effort. It's just entertaining that when I got into the legislature my first couple of years, I passed a lot of bills. I don't have trouble passing good bills. That is good policy that needs to happen. So they came to me with the Title IV rewrite and said, Senator Machicki, this is ready to go, and you're a guy that can get people to the table, both sides of the aisle. Will you take it? So we were foolish enough to believe that they were being forthcoming, that it was just ready to go. Well, we learned quickly that there is a lot of resistance to different pieces of the original bill. So we pulled back. We passed another bill that dealt with a few issues that were easy to agree upon. We adjusted Senate Bill 99 into a Senate Bill 165, which were the few pieces everyone agreed upon. And then we realized that these bigger chunks, this 115 pages worth of legislation, was going to take a lot more time with this 112-person stakeholder group, and that's where we are today.
Quick question about HB 165, if I remember correctly, that dealt with some issues with underage drinking, things like that. I saw a recent report in Anchorage Daily News that the ABC board hasn't done any underage compliance checks in like 2 years. And it would seem to me, as we're talking about what the ABC board is focused on, that I would think would be an important thing that they would be focused on. It seems to me it's a little more important than whether or not the distillery in Juneau is putting apple juice in their bourbon or whatever. So,
or hanging local art. Yes, right, I agree with you. That is a primary issue, and that's what we did focus on in 165. I know the Department of Justice funding has federal funding has dried up, and that's perhaps something we need to look at. That's been a key focus of mine. Two things about that is the other thing that we were focused on is minor consuming stuff, which previously ended up with a permanent record. If a kid happened to be at a high school house party, wasn't drinking, often law enforcement would walk in and write up everyone in the house, as opposed to finding out who that person was, and they would have a permanent record on. You know, some of these kids are the 4.25 AP students. They're suddenly applying to, a Ivy League school, and they find out that their little record thing was going to exclude them from that potential. So we corrected that, and we had a better option for correcting that behavior that didn't result in a permanent record.
Okay, well, let's move on to SB 76 specifically. Why don't you talk a little bit about this stakeholder group that you had that helped create this bill?
This is one of the bills where we actually have a sponsor that helped with some of the funding. Of course, we have all of the ABC board members and staff. Agnew Beck is kind of the contractor that's helping to manage the facilitation and the stakeholder outreach, and they've helped pull the meetings together. CHAR's a member. We've got the Alaska Municipal League. We have all of the different license types. We've got golf course owners, the municipalities from around the state, and then the key departments that are associated with alcohol as an industry and as a public safety risk. And that's Department of Revenue, Public Safety, Behavioral Health, a large group. And I think it's been effective. The one thing we left out is the person who likes to go buy a beer periodically.
Yeah.
I am part of the group. I like to buy a beer. I drink a little bit responsibly, but that is a good point that now it's time for the public testimony that's associated with this bill as we go through the final process. Often the special interests show up. Often the special interests sort of take the air out of the room when it comes to public testimony. We hope the public will, and we will get the word out for each opportunity for the public to weigh in. And as it goes through the process, the Title IV review team, the stakeholder team, will get the changes out to the public so that they can let us know how they feel about those things.
You mentioned municipalities participating. Do you know if any of the municipalities on the, any of the cities on the peninsula participated?
Actually, Stephanie Queen has been very active in the group, and it's because of the Kenai River Brewing kind of issues, as well as other opportunities that have come to the city, restaurants and new drinking establishments that they've had to turn aside because of the lack of local option. We've tried to address that somewhat in the bill. It remains a problem or an issue with our alcohol licensing that needs further progress in the future. That's clear.
Yeah. Well, that was one of the questions I was wanted to ask you. Kind of the theory, the underlying bedrock for Alaska liquor law is every 3,000 people, you get a beverage dispensary license, a package store license. But yet, if you look at the numbers for the peninsula, we're every town on the peninsula, we're overissued, the unincorporated boroughs overissued. So is this a problem in the sense that we have too many bars, or is it a problem in the sense that maybe this one for every 3,000 number that we have kind of established statewide doesn't work for everywhere in the state? Or what's your, you know, what's your take on that? There seems to be a little bit of a discontinuity. On the one hand, we have all these licenses out there that have all been grandfathered in, that people have paid money for and they feel they're invested in. And yet, on the other hand, we seem to say, well, based on our number, our ratio that we've established, we really this is really too many. So what's your take on that kind of discontinuity?
So, you know, obviously with the special license types, there's almost no continuity with the 3,000 person limit, right? And I think that's one of the things that we've been looking at. We've been looking at, first of all, converting the existing public convenience and other types of license holders to standard fully transferable licenses. I think standardizing the license types is going to be effective, but in that exercise, there has to be a local option that evaluates if that number's right for that community. So I think there are parts of the state, a state whose number one social issue is alcohol overconsumption, a state that has many social issues where we're also number one connected to alcohol overconsumption. We're number one in suicide, we're number one in domestic violence, sexual assault. I can go on and on and on. Some of that is associated with that. So in some parts of the state, I think there should probably be tighter controls on
distribution. Some parts there are, because we have local option prohibition.
That's right. Not all of those are in prohibition communities. But some parts of the state where the population grows, that where there's a heavy tourism industry, they're probably underserved, even though they're over the 3,000 per 3,000 person limit. So I'm not sure we're completely there yet on that balance. And this is not the be all end all. Right. We're adjusting things that clearly need to be adjusted to modernize the industry. But there's a lot of work that still has to happen. I think there's a lot of work that has to happen with the breweries and distilleries. I think there's work that has to happen on the right balance for an adequate number of license types that are available in different communities. So
is that something that you would think might be appropriate to push down to the municipalities to let them determine what the ratio should be within the bounds of their area of responsibility, rather than having a kind of a one size fits all for the entire state?
I think there should clearly be more local control with adequate sideboards, if you will. So those managing municipalities can vary somewhat dramatically. And there are times, with, if you did not have adequate sideboards and criteria, there are times when there may be folks that may be more interested in irresponsibly oversupplying a community than others. So I think that's why we haven't gotten there with this group all the way on the social, on the local control issues, is I think it's going to be a deeper dive on What are the unintended consequences that could occur? How do we appropriately protect the value of someone else's investment? So there's a balance, right? I mean, someone deserves to know what that number of licenses is going to look like in the future before they make an investment, a significant investment in an establishment. But I also don't believe that that control should be to the point where there's not competition allowed in the marketplace. So there's a balance point. We haven't gotten there on this bill. We actually haven't tried to get there on this bill. What we've done on this bill, we've brought together the things that are the benefits for youth, the alcohol industry, public safety and health, and local governments into one place that this is as far as you can go right now, where that team of essentially every stakeholder will agree. So there's more work to be done in the future.
When I look at SB 76, one of the big, I don't know if advances is the right word, changes, improvements, I guess, depending on your point of view, is that you're going to allow tiering licenses, which I know has been something that the industry has really thought was a good idea for quite a long time, where you're going to allow people to basically layer licenses. You get a manufacturing license, and then you get another license that would allow you to give samples, and then you could get another license that would allow you to sell, have a tasting room where you sold certain 36 ounces of beer per day or 3 ounces of alcohol or whatever the limit is. And then if you want to have a food, you could get a restaurant eating place license. So you want to talk a little bit about that? Because like I said, to me, that's one of the major innovations in the bill.
That's an excellent question. I mean, part of the, you know, key recommendations and efforts of the bill was not only to preserve the three-tier system, but we also want to respond to innovative business concepts with endorsements, right? And different license types. And luckily, we have our technical expert here. This is Anna Brawley that's with us, and she's with Agnew Beck, who's kind of been the contractor managing this effort.
Hi, Anna. Thanks, and welcome to Drinking on the Last Frontier.
Hi. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, the question I was asking about the layering of the tiering of licenses and endorsements and stuff is, under this new SB 76, will a distillery or a brewery be able to get a full restaurant eating place license?
Yeah, so that is one of the recommendations that's in the bill. And as you mentioned, currently the manufacturer licenses, they are able to sell alcohol directly to the public in some situations, you know, what we refer to as tasting rooms or kind of the retail spaces in those businesses. But they aren't able to own certain other license types. And the exception to that would be the brew pub license, which some people may be familiar with. And that one actually does allow you to have a retail space like a restaurant. An example would be Glacier Brew House in downtown Anchorage. But they only are allowed to produce up to a certain amount of their product, you know, a certain amount of beer each year. So it's kind of a right now, you can either produce as much beer as you want and you have some limitations on what you can sell, or you can only produce so much, but you're able to sell that in that retail space.
So my understanding reading SB 76 is that the brew pub license essentially would go away, and they would have a certain amount of time to transition to basically to function in the same manner. They would go out and get themselves a manufacturing license. They would get a retail space license, then they would get a restaurant eating place license and be able to serve food, sell their beer, and I guess if you had a restaurant eating place license, sell somebody else's beer or wine or that sort of thing. Am I understanding that correctly? Is that what the purpose of how SB 76 would function for them?
Yes, that's correct. And so the brew pub is an example of how that's working now. And I know one of the goals of the bill is to not interrupt what people are already able to do, especially if they've been operating responsibly, they've had their license for several years. You know, the types of licenses you may have in the case of brew pubs, they would be granted a brewery license, and they already have a beverage dispensary license or a bar. So they would be able to basically do what they're doing now, but just with a different structure. And then it also opens up for new businesses, you know, that may not exist yet, but that gives them the opportunity to have, like you said, a restaurant or to have that retail space.
You started talking about new businesses open up, and one of the requirements in the SB 76 that would, I guess it's grandfathered for current businesses, but it would take effect for new businesses, is that they could not sell more than, say, if you were a new brewery or distillery or with a manufacturing license and then a retail sales license, you couldn't sell more than 20% of your production retail. 80% would have to go wholesale. That seems like a pretty high bar for, say, a small brewery.
So I'll start on it just by covering the fact that it remains one of our sticking points. And I do want folks to remember that there's 4 renewals required before the 80-20 kicks in. And with that, I'll hand it off for a technical explanation. Perhaps, Anna, if you want to cover the two sides of this issue, that might help the public understand.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. I think some of the context that's helpful is, you know, this is a structure that's been around for about 80 years, and not just in Alaska, but elsewhere in the country, known as the three-tier system. And basically, these are why breweries or other manufacturers traditionally have not been able to sell their products directly to the public or to in a retail setting. And, you know, that those things are changing, obviously, as the market changes. And so I think the tricky thing is, you know, again, going back to the principle of we don't want to negatively impact businesses that are already operating, you know, and that includes all tiers of the system, the retail licensees, those that own bars and package stores, the wholesale distributors that kind of work, you know, between manufacturers and retailers, as well as importing products from other places, wine from Europe or wine from California, distilled spirits, those things. So a lot of the discussion that we had in developing these recommendations was trying to find some common ground among those different perspectives and really thinking about how changes to the licensing system impacts that industry as a whole. And so it's definitely been a challenge to find that middle ground, and I know that people have different perspectives, different priorities. So I guess I'll say it's tough to change the rules when there's already a lot of people and there's a lot of businesses with a lot at stake. I think that's been, like I said, the challenge, and it makes it tough to find that common ground.
So what I'd say, I mean, this group began meeting in 2012, right? I mean, the alcohol laws haven't changed largely since the 80s. And we focused on 5 areas, and that's alcohol licenses, permits, and trade practices, underage drinking and youth access to alcohol, local option communities, regulation of internet sales of alcohol, and the role and functions of the ABC board and staff. And these are all the 5 sort of subcommittees, if you will. So if you can imagine, when the bill was handed to me, and Anna may chuckle over this, that it was you know, ready for prime time and would just fly across the finish line and be on the governor's desk in weeks, it became quite clear that there are 2 sides to every approach in every aspect of this bill. So I came more kind of from the public safety, but responsible dispensing of alcohol side, right? I consume alcohol responsibly, a big fan. But also was aware of the alcohol problems. And then there's the industry side. And I've through the last couple of years, I have a much better understanding of why the sides have the stands that they have on the particular issue. So it's been challenging, but I'd have to say, and I don't know if you want to comment on this, when we've come to loggerheads, if you will, which has happened many times, my role has been to sort of step in and say, all right, This is the time where everybody pulls back and decides how we're going to move forward from this point, because we've had many of them and the group has responded positively to get to this point. So you could probably imagine that new issues that are counter to the current direction is going to be challenging at best.
Well, one of the changes that did happen in the alcohol laws in the last 30 years was in 2006, the legislature legalized tasting rooms for breweries. Before that, all the breweries could do was give away samples. And if you look from my perspective as a consumer, we went from having 12 breweries in the state to we're pushing 34, 35 breweries right now. And much of that growth was fueled by the fact that a brewery could open up a retail tasting room and have a revenue stream. I mean, yes, you're right. It's a subversion of the three-tier system in the sense that they are capturing revenue that would normally go to the wholesaler and the retailer within the strictures that the state has put on them of only selling 36 ounces per person per day, no entertainment, all the rest of the limitations. So I understand what you're saying, but like I said, looking at it from a consumer's point of view, instituting this 80%, 20% rule where only 20% of the revenue can come from a tasting room, you can forget Grace Ridge Brewing Company opening. You can forget Resolution Brewing Company opening in Anchorage. You can forget Icy Straits in Hoonah. I could probably name three or four others that have opened on that model. So, like I said, from a consumer's point of view, it looks to me like this requirement could significantly damp down any future growth for small local breweries. Ben Milstein out of Kodiak Island, he talks about his concept of the brewery as bakery model, because Ben's not interested in wholesaling his beer. He doesn't send it off Kodiak Island. He wants to be the local brewery for Kodiak Island. We have several other breweries that, you know, Haynes Brewing Company and Haynes. Paul Wheeler, he's not interested in sending his beer anywhere else but Haynes, selling it to his local market, having people come into his brewery and enjoy his beer. While obviously they'll have time to comply and everything, it seems to me like this would effectively shut the door on any new breweries that wanted to open up and operate under that model, where they're not looking to compete statewide. They're just looking to sell good local fresh beer in their community.
Well, I think that's clearly part of the adjustments that are going to have to take place. I mean, it's just the alcohol industry is changing. And I'll use our own Kenai River Brewing, which is a place, it's town square, right? It's near our park. It's where people stop after work. It's very different. And somehow we're going to have to bring the license types together in recognition of that new direction and satisfy sort of the business models of both types. Because I tell you, the black and white approach is not working, and consumers are increasingly less satisfied with that result.
This is a set of rules that has been around for 80 years, and it's tough to change. And I think every state has struggled with some version of this. Some states have gone completely on the side of, you know, letting manufacturers own retail licenses with no limits. Other states have chosen to keep those limits in place, and so it's still kind of an ongoing conflict. And so, I think it was a struggle to find some kind of compromise, and certainly this isn't going to be the last word about alcohol control. It's tough because it's getting into an industry that has those rules, and you know, it's like if I wanted to be a commercial fisherman, and I didn't want to follow the rules, I think that would be tough. But at the same time, industries do need to change. And so I think it's kind of at the heart of a lot of these issues in the alcohol industry right now of what's the future going to look like.
I think you're right. It's certainly we're not going to go to the Wild West. And the tasting rooms as we have them today operate under quite a few restrictions. You know, if you think about somebody walking in the door today trying to make 80-20, I think it would be very, very challenging. But as you say, I'm sure it's going to be discussed.
Well, and I just think an important aspect of it is it just like any industry or any sort of established code that has had this level of longevity, changes that are like a guillotine are just very difficult, right? I mean, it's a slow, steady progress. It's been a struggle, but it's been a very positive, you know, we've had our knockdown dragouts, and it's resulted in a bill that is comprehensive change, but certainly is does not solve every issue in the industry.
Well, I think we've beat SB 76 pretty much into submission. But before I let you go, Senator, let me ask you one final question. I can't not ask you a question about taxes. What do you think about our current state of alcohol excise tax in Alaska? A couple of years ago, the governor proposed doubling it. We currently have the second highest in the nation. What's your feelings on that?
So being highest or the second highest in the country, I have not heard adequate support for increasing the taxes in the state. Often when you think about sin taxes, it's about offsetting the effects of that particular sin, right? You know, I have a bill on smoke-free workplaces. I'm not a big supporter of Alaska's workers being subject to the effects of secondhand smoke. But I also don't want to control behavior by it costing more. I just, that's not the direction I want to go. And I feel the same way about alcohol taxes. I think we're probably in the right place. The millions that we take in, and I'd have to look at the FY18 totals to have an idea of what we're going to be bringing in this year, but $35 or $40 million certainly does not offset the negative effects of alcohol in the state of Alaska. It just doesn't. It would have several zeros after that to offset those effects. So I don't buy that's exactly what it's designed for, because depending on the sin, you couldn't tax enough to cover the offsets, right? So I'm not leading in that direction. I think the issues that are presented by alcohol, we've dealt with many of them in this bill, and I hope that we continue to do so going into the future. So I don't think that you're going to see an increase in alcohol taxes pass the legislature for FY19.
I and all the rest of the people in Alaska who consume alcohol say thanks. Appreciate it. And I want to say thanks to you and to Anna for spending some time talking with us on this. I hope maybe this is the year SB 76 moves forward, gets out of Labor and Commerce, and maybe actually makes it to the governor's desk. So we'll be watching, and we'll be rooting for you from the cheap seats here in at KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. So thanks again for coming in.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for the opportunity, and we're here to answer questions if we can help folks, but we will get all of the opportunities for public testimony to you to get out to people that care about this issue across the Kenai. So thank you.
Thank you. Our next segment was recorded at Kenai River Brewing Company on Friday, December 1st at the release of the Salteshi Trail Ale. We're here at the Kenai River Brewing Company. This is your host, Bill Howell, here on Drinking on the Last Frontier on KDLL 91.9 FM Kenai Soldotna. And we're here for the release of the Salteshi Trails Ale to celebrate the 30th anniversary of Salteshi Trails Association. So here's Kenai River Brewing owner Doug Hoag to tell us about the beer.
So we made a pale ale, and it's got the addition of a little bit of rye, so it kind of balances things out, gives it this little sharpness to the beer, and it's a really nice medium-bodied 44 IBUs roughly beer, so not super bitter, and it's just I think it's going to be one of our most popular beers that we've got going.
So now, my understanding is the Salteshi Trails is going to get some of the proceeds of this, right, Doug?
That's right. The more people drink and buy of this beer, the more money we can give to Salteshi Trails Association, which is a really cool thing. So my hope is that this beer really does catch on, and then there's going to be a certain barrelage proceed that we give to Salteshi. So that's kind of a pretty cool thing that we hope can really prosper.
Well, that's great, Doug. And so everybody out there that wants to support Salteshi Trails, you need to drink a lot more of this beer. It's a great tasting beer. I've had a sample. It's wonderful. Thanks, Doug.
You're welcome. Drink up.
Can I? Yeah, do it. Yep.
Sure. I don't normally do this in the brewery, so this is actually the very first time ever. So this is kind of cool. Very special occasion that we're celebrating here tonight, and it's the 30th anniversary of Salteshi Trails Association, and we're super excited. It's a big part of our community, and we would like to support that as much as we can, so that's why we have agreed to do this here, and we have, I think, almost the entire board of Salteshi Trails here, which is a really, really awesome thing. So tonight, actually right now, we're releasing a beer that we made specifically for the Trails Association. It's called Salteshi Trail Ale, and it is an awesome rye pale ale, very balanced. You're gonna love it. I don't know who's calling me. And so make sure you drink that beer, because the more you drink, the more money we give to Salteshi Trails Association. So that's a pretty neat thing. So drink the beer, it's on tap right now.
All right, we're here talking to John Pottis, the president of the Saltesche Trails Association. So, John, why don't you tell us a little bit about Saltesche Trails? I suspect most of our listeners probably know about it, but there might be some folks out there that don't.
Right on. So the trail system is located up behind Skyview Middle School. And this year is actually one of the reasons that we're doing this and we have the beer going is we're celebrating our 30th anniversary this year. It was 30 years ago this fall that we signed our first contract with the borough for the land that the trails are on. We have about 25 kilometers of trails. I think it's about 12 kilometers of that are lighted, so they can be accessed at night. And then we have two main trailheads, one right there at Skyview Middle School, and then the other one off of K Beach. We have a trailhead right across from the Sports Center. It's a great, great asset to our community. We love the trails out there.
If I recall correctly, you've got ski trails and one snowshoe trail, right?
Yeah, so the trailhead off of K Beach, down that lower trailhead is called the Wolverine. You can actually snowshoe on the Wolverine. And then we also have in the summertime, it's a single track bike. And in the wintertime, it's a snowshoe trail, but it's a dedicated, it's much narrower. It's only, you know, as wide as a couple of people wide. But it goes from that trailhead at K Beach all the way up to Skyview Middle School. You can take that, and that's a fat bike and snowshoe trail in the wintertime.
And I understand you've got a new trail system.
We do. The main trails behind Skyview there, that's, except for the Wolverine, that's all in the wintertime skiing only, Nordic skiing only. But right across from the Soldotna landfill, there's a track of land from Isaac Road that goes all the way down to Slycock Creek. We have recently acquired that from the borough, and that whole track of land is going to be developed into a multi-use for wintertime. So we've got right now, there's a red building right across from the entrance to the Soldotna landfill, right across the highway. There's a red building. If people want to park at that red building and then walk behind, we've got a 1 mile long loop that's cut in there right now. And I actually skied it last night. You can ski it, you can ski jort, you can bike it, you can walk it, you can run it, you can do anything you want as long as it's not a motorized sport. You're welcome to use that trail. It is going and it's a great trail. Ultimately, we're looking at probably putting in about 25 kilometers again of trails down on that piece of land that will be dedicated to multi-use.
So what do you think about this beer release here? Have you tried the beer yet?
I haven't. It just, they unveiled it 6 minutes ago, and I haven't had a chance to get over and try it yet, but I'm really excited. I really appreciate Kenai River Brewing and the support that they have of the trails and their willingness to brew that beer for us.
Well, thanks. Appreciate you taking the time out to talk to us, and best of luck.
Thank you very much.
So we're here talking with Penny Vodla, who's sampling the brand new Saltesche Trails Ale. What do you think of it, Penny?
I actually love it. And we stopped in for tonight just to celebrate and welcome this beer in, and I actually think it's superb. Like all the beers here, actually, but this is going to be my next new favorite.
Okay, we're here with Jim Bennett, and he's also a Saltesche member, and he's going to talk to us about what he thinks of the beer. Take it away, Jim.
I think this is a good example of what community does here. We have the Saltesche Trails Association, which is an incredibly awesome ski trail, hiking trail, bike trail thing, and we have this brewery here, Kenai River Brewing, and they've always backed Saltesche Trails. So to have that partnership between a great outdoor activity and some great food and beer couldn't be better. It's one of the things that makes Soldotna a great place to live.
So what do you think of the beer itself?
You know, I'm a stout guy usually, but I rode my fat tire bike over here, so I needed something that was thirst quenching, and this hits the spot.
Welcome back to Drinking on the Last Frontier. I'm your host, Bill Howell, here on KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. In this month's final segment, we'll be taking another beer travel. We're giving beer gear a rest this month, so this month's final segment will be beer travels. For this month's beer travels, I thought we'd talk about something close to home, Alaska Beer Week and its grand finale, the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival. Created in 2011, Alaska Beer Week celebrates the depth and diversity of craft beer here on the Last Frontier. Alaska Beer Week 2018 runs from Friday, January 12th through Sunday, January 21st, with craft beer-centric events held throughout our magnificent state. That's 10 days of craft beer. And as you might expect, all sorts of creativity and fun will abound. Alaska's craft brewers are hitting the stage during the cold, dark days of January to showcase their finest wares. This is an exciting time of year that not only brings out year-round supportive local beer aficionados, but also beer-seeking geeks from outside. Alaska Beer Week boosts Alaska's winter economy with travel and hospitality dollars while also promoting this great state as a destination for craft beer and all the other local things involved in the enjoyment of craft beer, like great food. Alaska Beer Week's Anchorage kickoff party will be held by Willowaw Social on Thursday, January 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. Doors open at 6:30. $20 tickets get you entry, an Alaska Beer Week goblet, two Beer Fest tickets, festive beads, and live music. Additional beers and food are pay as you go. After the official kickoff, there are Alaska Beer Week events scheduled all around the state, but the lion's share take place in Anchorage. There are beer dinners at several of the best restaurants in Anchorage during the course of the week. You can find the best listing of events on the Alaska Beer Week website, www.akbeerweek.com. The grand finale to Alaska Beer Week is the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival, which is held in the Egan Center in downtown Anchorage. This is the second oldest beer festival in Alaska. The 2018 Fest will be the 24th annual. Only the Haynes Beer Fest is older. This is by far the largest festival, with a couple of hundred breweries and over 1,000 beers on offer. The festival consists of three sessions: a Friday evening session, a Saturday afternoon session, and a Saturday evening session. The Friday and Saturday evening sessions start at 6 p.m., and tickets cost $45. The Saturday afternoon session begins at 2 p.m. and costs $55, with the extra $10 going to support the Brewers Guild of Alaska. The tickets include a 6-ounce commemorative tasting glass and 30 tickets for beer samples. Based on personal experience, I strongly advise attending the Saturday afternoon session, as the evening sessions tend to degenerate into drink fests full of 20-somethings trying to drink up their 30 tickets. The Saturday afternoon session is known as the connoisseur session, and brewers are encouraged to bring a special beer to offer only at this session. It's also during this session that the winners of the barley wine and winter seasonal competitions are announced. While this event can be extremely crowded, 2,500 tickets are available for each session, and it typically sells out, it is a wonderful opportunity to taste beers from some of the smaller and more remote breweries in Alaska, all in one place. Tickets are sold through Ticketmaster or at the door, if any go unsold. So that's the skinny on Alaska Beer Week and the Great Alaska Beer and Barley Wine Festival. Whether you can make it to Anchorage for some of the big events, or if you just raise a glass at your local brewery, be sure to celebrate our state's outstanding craft brewing industry. And that pretty much wraps it up for this month's Drinking on the Last Frontier, the last show of 2018. We hope to have a lot of great stuff for you in the new year, and we hope you'll stay with us and continue to listen. As your final thought for this show, I'd leave you with this quote: "Tradition is not the worship of ashes. It's the preservation of fire." Happy New Year, everyone. This is Bill Howell, Drinking on the Last Frontier, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.
Beers of Alaska, beer on the last frontier. Beers of Alaska, learn about them here. IPAs, ales, and stouts, pilsners, porters, too. Microbrew. Might be the worst. Cleanse your palate before you quench your thirst.